the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. All right, man. Post-draft edition, Talking with TD. I am your host, Teron Davenport. You are now rocking with TD. I appreciate each of you for tuning in. We got double duty here, Elijah Campbell and David James, both together making this thing work, man. David, I appreciate you coming on, making this happen, man. How you like the Titans draft? You like it?
It was pretty good, you know. I was definitely surprised about the Weaver stuff that came out later on today, but it was really good though. I mean, you really can't complain too much. At least I feel like you can't.
Favorite pick?
I really do like the first round pick.
I do.
They definitely needed some help on the corner position, but it was a good pick. I feel like for in that spot,
good value, right?
Yeah.
I can agree with you on that because here's the thing. When that guy is healthy, he is a legit dude.
He is. And I think that's the big part is he's not like he's hurt. But again, what he can do for the Titans will help out tremendously. And they need that right now with a corner spot.
Exactly.
Fulton's hurt. We don't know what he's going to do. I personally am a big fan of Fulton because of LSU. But again, though, I feel like that like he's going to do really well for the Titans.
Yeah. I think Fulton will be good to go. I think he'll be one of the top corners for them. Obviously, you have Jack Rabbit Jenkins, who was acquired. Yeah. You got Kevin Johnson in the mix. My favorite pick, though, was Elijah Molden.
That was a good one, too.
I'll get into that on the final segment when we wrap it up. But what I want to get into is the Rashad Weaver information and situation, and it's a tough one. This is always something that you want to treat with very delicate hands, and this is a situation that you never ever want to be involved with. It's something that even you know as a franchise you never want to be involved with, as a player you never want to be involved with, but most importantly as a young lady you never want to be involved with. So I think that what we have to do, first things first, and I said this on social media, I said it on Twitter, I think really the key here is let's not jump to conclusions. Let's not have a rash judgment or anything like that. Let's not automatically say Rashad Weaver is a domestic abuser.
Yeah.
You know, and let's not say the young lady is a money chaser.
Of course.
And that's the main thing, and it's unfortunate because – social media, you know, Twitter especially, just has a way of unearthing the worst in us.
I'm
just imploring everybody to just let's sit back and look at the situation. Mm-hmm. Now, what is the situation? It's
pretty crazy.
It's crazy. And for me, okay, first things first, this is the first violation, so to speak.
Yeah.
I get it. Rashad Weaver is a young man. I get it. He wants to be out and about. I just feel it wasn't wise for him to be in a bar at that time.
Exactly.
We're talking, I believe it was, April 18th. I mean, this is like less than 2 weeks before the biggest thing of your life is about to happen. And for me, I don't think it was wise of him to be at that bar.
Exactly, especially on the biggest day of your life, like you just said, like to be there. You could be with your family. Be with your family. Don't be at that bar, but because you never know what's going to happen. Because you could, he's over 21, so obviously, like there's going to be drinking involved. But like you never know what's going to happen. So be with your family over being with people that you don't even know who they are, or who you are. They don't.
It's tough. You can't, and I'm not going to say you can't. I'm going to say it's not wise to be in that situation. And it's unfortunate because, the accounts that I got from people that have dealt with him said he's a really nice young man. He's really a quality dude.
Yeah.
But when you're – Herm Edwards used to say it. the only thing out after midnight is the devil.
Yeah, you
know
exactly,
what I mean? At 2 a.m., that is the devil.
Some would say after midnight is where the people come out. It is where the bad people come out, yeah.
Yeah, and that's – you just have to be careful. So you got that. But then, you know, being in that – in that environment, being in that situation. So what happened was there was an argument between himself and the young lady. Mm-hmm. He told the police after they were separated that she threw a drink on him. She told the police that she spilled the drink on him. Either way, a drink was on him, and apparently he reacted. But see, the damning thing in all this and why it makes it tough to give him benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
Is what he said.
Oh, exactly.
You know, yeah. And my thing is this. First, you don't even think that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, second, if you think that, you don't say it. And what he said was he has no problem hitting a woman. Yes. This is what was in the report. He has no problem hitting a woman if she deserves it or something along those lines. And for me, you know, as a father of four girls, I hate hearing that. You know what I mean? And I don't think that that's something that should be in anyone's mind. And as a man, it should never be your intentions to hit a woman. Now, I'm not going to get on a soapbox, you know, and say that he was wrong and this, that, because we don't know.
It's just like, it was in the moment. And again, you should never say those words, utter those words at all. Especially if you're going to become a professional athlete. Going into that, you should never say that.
I just think as a person who has male chromosomes, you shouldn't say that. But
exactly.
You know, when I say I'm not going to get on here and say that he's wrong, get on a soapbox and say that he's wrong, I'm talking about in regards to what had happened. Because we don't know, right? So as the report further counts, he went down one way, she went down the other way. So that was the conclusion of that report. He went down, I believe it was, she went down 16th, he went down 17th. The bar is off of 16th.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So they went separate ways, apparently. Somehow, at least according to the report, they got back together. The police arrived on the scene. She was laying there. There was a crowd around her. One witness said he hit her. Another witness said he didn't. The officer said that he looked at her for injuries and didn't see any injuries consistent with a blow to a head. Now you got, after that, April 22nd, she goes to the hospital because she has vomiting, which is something that is a symptom of a concussion. It comes with that. So she has vomiting. The hospital diagnoses her with a concussion. She talks to the officer, reveals that, and then a few days later, a week later, the report comes out. The criminal complaint is charged. And then in the complaint, she said that he grabbed her neck, threw her to the ground, and she hit her head. Now, it's terrible. Even picturing that, it's terrible for that young lady to have go through that. You know, so I don't know what happened, but I think this whole situation is something like it's an example of why, you know, as a person, period, you want to try not to be involved with those. But I think it's amplified. And when I say be involved with those, I'm talking about be out there at these times of night.
Be in that position. Know.
But as a celebrity, it's times 1,000 how important it is to be very selective about your environment and who you surround yourself with and what places you put yourself in. So now we have the situation where the Titans selected a guy on Saturday.
Yeah.
He had a criminal complaint filed just a bit before the draft on Friday, and everybody is pointing fingers at the Titans and saying, hey, how could you do this? And I'm not going to do that either.
Yeah.
I think that's another case of where we have to wait. Now, there are some teams. Paul Kaharsky did an excellent job reporting it out, and he has some scouts tell him that they did know about this.
Yeah.
I know some situations where, and I was told that it might not have been possible for too many teams, maybe even no teams, to know about it. So that's something else that we have to figure out. Like, what degree of availability was this information? So it's all just a big pool, a big pot of just negativity and just a bad situation.
Exactly. Yeah, it's really hard to even say, like, oh, this happened on, like you said, Friday, right?
And it was released on Friday.
Yeah, released on Friday. So, like, I get where people come from because it's definitely, that's hard to look at to see, hey, Titans, why didn't you see this?
Yeah.
But, like, that's a lot of information on a day-to-day basis, or, like, just from a day-to-day basis, just to get that and say, make the decision like that, just to even get that information, it's hard.
It's tough. And I mean, in this situation, you have two separate police reports, you have a criminal complaint.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, I think we really need to let everything play out. Everything reveal itself, right?
Yeah.
There can't be any reading of the tea leaves. Mm-hmm. We need to actually see the facts, what had happened. And you have a preliminary hearing on October 5th. This is obviously a situation that everybody is going to monitor. It's very unfortunate. But I did want to open up with that because that's kind of like the huge thing, when it comes to Titans and the draft. So I promise, ladies and gentlemen, the rest of this show will not be as dark and gloomy. There are some things that we have to talk about that, you know, need to improve as far as some of these prospects, and we'll get into that. Sure. So stay tuned. We'll have Chris Sanders on to talk a bit about Dez Fitzpatrick. I got Nate Washington coming on, and he's going to give us a take on Caleb Farley. He had a similar injury, so be sure to check us out. We're going to be right back. We'll pay these bills. I'll be right back to you.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Yeah. Ooh-wee. Big things coming. Yes, sir. That's the music you hear. Hear the guitar. Run TMC.
Let's go.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go. Let's go. We got Chris Sanders on the air. Definitely a good opportunity to talk a little shop, man. Chris, what's going on?
Man, I'm good, man. I'm still a little hoarse from, our NFL special on the radio the other day. I sound like Billy Ocean. You'll never find.
You know, I was, when you said you were a little hoarse, I thought you were going to say you sound like Bobby Womack. You think you're lonely now. Oh, Jeffrey Osborne.
How you doing, man?
Hey man.
About this draft, boss?
Yo, it's really interesting, man. The draft is really interesting. You got this, you know, we had some big things set up for this show, but unfortunately, some news in regards to the Titans rookie, Rashad Reaver.
Yeah.
It kind of messed things up, but I don't want to get too far into that, but, you know, what are your initial thoughts when you saw that news?
You know, I want to be really, really careful because I want to wait till it comes out to really actually happen. I don't want to say he did it or he didn't say it, but guys got to understand that, you know, when you go to these places and when you go to these different bars, people are waiting to set you up. I just think next time he needs to learn from what just happened this time to put himself in smarter places. And I'm not going to act like when I got in the league and when I was in college that I didn't go to places. But now you're a professional and now you got drafted. Now you got to make sure that you don't put yourself in this position again.
Yeah, and I think that's the big issue, right? That's the one to be concerned about, just being in that position, man. So hopefully that's something that they'll be able to get resolved in the near future.
Right.
Obviously, a situation like that, like, that's not something that you want hanging over anybody's head. So that's one fourth-round pick. Right. But I wanted to get you on to talk about the other fourth-round pick.
Let's go.
And obviously, that pick is Dez Fitzpatrick, the receiver out of Louisville. What are some of the things, like, your initial thoughts when you see this guy after you've looked into him a little bit further?
You know, I went back and go looked at, the Senior Bowl and watched the 101s.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you the good things I like about him and some of the things that he can work on. I mean, number one, he's physical at the line of scrimmage. I mean, I love his releases. I love that he knows what he's doing and he has a game plan. And I love his feet. You know, and also I love when he gets the guy off the spot. When I say get the guy off the spot, it makes the DB open up his hips and then stack him. We say stack him, that means get back on your line. He does that very, very well. The only thing that I'm concerned about is when he starts running the digs and he starts running those over the middle routes, he's not creating a lot of separation. That's just the only thing that I'm concerned about. But I think this is a great pick for the Tennessee Titans. He's big. He's 6'4", over 200-some pounds. a guy that can go and get the ball. And the one thing I love about him is, you know, you have a lot of young receivers that come out of college and go to the NFL. When the ball's thrown, they don't come back to the ball like on a curl out or a dig. Mm-hmm. He does that very, very well. Does it very, very well. And it just shows you that somebody's been working with him. But the things that he's got to work on, he's got to create separation when he runs those digs and work at the top of the route. When I say the top of the route, that means give him some a little head fake or give him a little jab to make sure you're going opposite of where you're thinking that he's going. So if he can work on that, you have a polished receiver.
And having been someone that did that, and now you're someone who's teaching that, what's the best way, and I'm not saying you're telling Rob Moore how to do his job, the Titans receiver coach, but how would you approach getting him to sharpen that area of his game?
I'm going to give you an illustration. You ever watch Rocky, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I watched Rocky II. He said in Rocky II Rocky lost to Apollo Creed the first round. And then the second round, he was getting ready to fight him again, but his trainer said this. He said, you got to work on something. You got to work on your weakness. And what he did is he tied his hand behind his back and he boxed left-handed to make sure he mastered, you know, his left hand because that's what he was weak in. So what Rob Moore has to do is he has to turn on the film and say, okay, you're weak at bursting off the cut. You're weak at creating separation. You're weak at what we do at the top of route and get repetition after repetition after repetition after repetition and make sure he gets it to where it's second nature. That's how you create a great wide receiver is he does it over and over again. Tell him chest over your knees. Every wide receiver coach says that chest over your knees, burst off the cut, float in and out of the cut. If he can do that and do drills after drills, because Rob Moore has some great drills. If he can do that, then now you got yourself a diamond in the rough.
What about his vertical ability? Because
you
were a guy, like you were known for your speed, right? And I mean, Fitzpatrick, he's not known for his speed. He 4.46, 4.47. It's solid. It's not something where you say, oh, he's a burner.
Right.
But he averaged 19 yards a catch, and he consistently beat DBs deep. What is it that he does to be able to do that?
He tracks the ball well. And then I know he may run a 4.46 or a 4.47, but he still has that extra gear. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I watched where he was pulling away from catch.
Yep.
He caught like a post, caught it, and he started pulling away. Some guys, it takes a little bit for them to get started. Some guys don't run the 40. Like with me, I was pretty good at the 40, but we get in a 100-meter dash, I'm beating your brakes off. That's just what it is. I mean, I had a second gear, and this is what this cat has. What he does is when he sees the ball, he goes and gets it. And he has that second gear to where, you know what, the DB's already up to top speed, but I got that second and third gear, and I'm going to go get this thing.
No doubt. And to your point, there was a play. I was watching the Wake Forest game from last year, from 2019, rather.
Right.
And he worked a double move, a slow go on the outside, and the corner kind of sat on it, and there was a little contact at the top. He fought through the contact, which really impressed me because you know what typically happens. You're calling for the flag, right? Mm-hmm. But he fought through it, understood that the play was still going. The quarterback threw it, and he did show that gear. It was like, in Madden where you hit the turbo button to go chase the ball. That's what he did to go get it. And he scored a touchdown. So that's really interesting you bring that up.
Yeah, and just kind of piggyback off that, I'm not going to say he's like this, but he reminds me of Drew Bennett. Drew Bennett was maybe a 4.5, 4.6, but why is he always behind people?
Yeah.
Because he had that second gear. Some people don't run the 40. Some people don't run them fast. But when that ball's in the air and I got a post or a go route, it's just something about the instinct. It's just something in their mind to say, you know what, I got to go get it.
Is that something that's natural or from your perspective, is that natural or is that something that can be developed over time?
It can be developed. I mean, you know, when I was at The Ohio State University, Joey Galloway, man, probably a burner in a 40-yard dash, but he wasn't a 100 guy. I mean, he run like a 4.2 electric, but then he run like a 10.800.
Uh-huh.
But then once he improved to where I'm up at top speed and I got that second gear, and that's what took his game to a whole different level. And what he did is he started running more like 110s, 150s to hold up that top speed and get it to the next gear. So that's exactly what Fitzpatrick can do. Do 100, do 110s, 150s, and do intervals and ladders. And I think that's going to improve his game and take it to another level.
What do you think, and we're talking to Chris Sanders, former Titans receiver. Chris, what do you think are some of the things that, you know, Fitzpatrick may encounter that could possibly keep him from being an impactful player as a rookie? Because as you know, as you don't know, because you did have an outstanding rookie year.
Thank you, sir.
But typically, it's not something that guys are able to come in and just hit the ground running with.
He, what he's going to have to do is, if he can't get off the press, he's going to be sitting right next to the coach cheering. Let's go, guys. I mean, you got to get off the press, because I'm going to tell you one thing. They're going to pay attention to A.J. Brown. They're going to pay attention to Reynolds, and they're going to go man-to-man with him. And if he can't get off the press, they're going to get somebody else to do it. So what he has to do is master getting off the press and getting his release, because you better believe they're going to say, oh, he's a rookie, he's a fourth-round draft pick, we'll just put somebody on him. They did that to me as a rookie, and I averaged the first four games, I was averaging 30.5 yards a catch, and I ended up with 23.5. So that just tells you, if I can master getting off the press, stacking guys, and hitting those home runs, then now he can do what he needs to do.
And that's the thing that he does well, and that's something that I felt made him a similar guy to Josh Palmer when I was watching both of those guys. They're not burners, right? But they are really good at the line, and they work their releases well, and they stack that corner. And when you get him in that trail position, you just got him. You can do whatever you want, man. Yep. You lean to the corner and go to the post. He's going to the corner, and you're wide open, or vice versa. And that's the really important thing about getting him in the trail technique.
Yeah, and when they're getting the trail technique, now when he's number one, the DB's panicking. He's already panicking. So now when you get to the top of the route, you got to be a salesman. You got to be a salesman. You're selling. You're selling something that they can't buy. So what you're doing is you say, I got a dig route, an inside dig route. I'm making him think I'm going to run a comeback. So my eyes go back. So I'm selling him that I'm running the comeback, and then I'm coming in as a dig. So I don't need to run a 4-3. I don't need to full run a 4-2. Once I do that and get the DB's hips locked, going opposite of where I'm going, I just create a separation.
Exactly, and that's the thing. And I love the terminology, being a salesman. You know, that's what you have to do. Let's flip over to the other receiver.
Sure.
And it's funny because, right, we talk about, I almost said Josh Palmer, we talk about Dez Fitzpatrick, right, and him not being a 4-3 guy, but him being a deep threat still. Now let's go over to Racy McMath, who is actually a 4-3 guy, but doesn't really have – The production, what are your thoughts when you look at him?
Okay, here's the good things about him, and here's the things he need to work on. Number one, he's fast, he's quick, but he's very raw at running routes. And a lot of times when you get a fast guy that runs 4-3-4 or 4-2, sometimes he can't get out of his cuts because he's going so fast. And if you look at him, he's like a – when he gets out of his cuts, and this is no disrespect, and I'm just being careful when I say this, he's just real herky-jerky when he's at the top of the route. You know, when you're herky-jerky at the top of the route, a DB's going to break on this. And then I watched him, you know, in one-on-ones. When you take a wide outside release, you got to remember the DB is cutting you off at angles. And he already knows that if you take a wide outside release, the sidelines is his friends.
Yep.
So all you can do is go out of bounds. So I watched him. He just relied on so much of his speed and relied so much on running the 4-3 that he doesn't really understand how to run routes. And if you don't understand how to run routes in this league, I don't care if you run a 4-1-7. All they're going to do is cut you off when you take that wide release, and know that if you break down and your shoulders are high, then I'm breaking immediately.
Yeah, because that breakdown, you know, with the shoulders or whether it's you know, chopping your steps too much, those are all indicators. He's going to read something's going on. Let me throttle down and let me, you know, see where he's going to go. So that's a great point. So do you think that he's someone – is that a down-the-line kind of thing? Is that a never kind of thing? Is that specifically special teams? How do you look at him?
It all depends on what the team wants. I mean, if guys start to get hurt, yeah, you have some depth. But he's more like a special team guy because, you know, in this league, teams want to win now. I mean, they don't. You know, yeah, you want to develop players, but sometimes, especially with the COVID and stuff going on, we need you to play now. We'll develop you as we go along, but we need guys that can come in and contribute now. And right now, no disrespect, but I just don't think that he's NFL ready. Not that he's not fast enough, not that he's not talented enough, but you got to be a technician in what you do. And right now, he's just not a technician in running routes. And I'm being careful when I say this. It's not degrading the kid. I'm talking about the wide receiver. So the wide receiver needs to be improved. Why? By bursting off the cut, by learning how to stack the defensive back, by getting him in the chase position, by bursting off the cut, by doing all these things to become a polished wide receiver. And right now, I just don't think he's that.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear that he's not. So we'll see what happens there. Before we get you out of here, Mike Vrabel, right? And I told you about this. You know, I talked to him, and I you know, on the presser, and I said I don't really think it doesn't seem like the team has a defined slot receiver. He said maybe we have differing opinions of the wide receiver core. How do you look at this slot position? Is that a void on the roster?
I mean, I'm going to give you a perfect example. You got A.J. Brown, you got Reynolds, and just say if Humphries was there. When Humphries was in the slot, he was a master at the choice route. He was a master at, okay, I can run a slant, or I can run out, I can run a quick out, I can run a quick seam. He was master at that. You got to have quick twitch, you know, with your core. And out of all these guys that are in there playing wide receiver, who has a quick twitch muscle? Who has a quick twitch that can pop, get out of there, get out of the cut, pop, get out of their choice, and make the decision on the run?
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody. A.J. Brown can run a slant and catch it in yards after the catch, but I'm talking about in choice routes to pivot, get out of there. For example, when they played the Indianapolis Colts 2 years ago, when Humphries was at the 6-yard line and he ran a choice route and he stuck his foot in the ground, caught it, and had the DB going opposite where you're going, touchdown. That's what I'm talking about.
Exactly.
That's the slot guy.
Exactly. And that's exactly, you know, what I was referring to when I said that. So, hey, man, great stuff, man. Appreciate you.
Doc.
Yo, excellent stuff on the draft on Thursday and Friday,
oh,
man. I had a ball.
I'm learning from you, man.
Yeah, hey.
I was just throwing oops.
We had the Shaq and Kobe, man, and we did.
Man, appreciate you, my man.
All right, man. I'll holler at you.
Thank you, my man. All right.
This is Jayon Brown, and you're now talking with TD.
As always, I have to introduce my guy, Nate Washington, with the LOX. You know, That's something that we share, love for the locks, man. So without further ado, let me bring in my guy, man. Nate, what's going on?
TD, man, I missed you, man. How's things?
Yeah, man, I definitely missed chopping it up, man. We always have a bunch of fun, and you know, it's always good to get to talk shop, man. How you been, all right?
Man, things have been great. Can't wait for this football season to come back around so we do what we do best, man. You know how we do.
You already know the Nate and TD show. It does what it does. I wanted to ask you, though, because, I mean, you have played – you played for a while in the league, and obviously you had various injuries, but one of the things that was notable to me, and I text you about it, and you had mentioned that, you know, you had a similar back injury to what Caleb Farley has. Can you let the listeners know what you had? And I just want to kind of get into how you dealt with it.
Right. Well, if I'm correct, I think he's dealing with something along the lines of a herniated disc.
Yes.
And what happened to me is over the duration of my career, I had started to generate bad lower back spasms, like out of nowhere. So immediately after I retired, I looked into it, and what happened was I had grew bone spurs on my S1 and my C5 disc that were pinching my nerves. And so, ironically enough, it was going to require some type of surgery. I couldn't label the exact surgery that it was that they gave me, the medical term for it. But basically, it was just shaving down the bone spur to relieve the pressure on the nerves so the nerves can breathe through the vertebrae as they should, because those spurs had grown to a point where it was pinching my nerve, where I had really bad back spasms. Now, with all that being said, sounds pretty graphic, sounds pretty detailed, especially when you're thinking about the back. But in all reality, I had my back surgery 3 days after I had reconstructive knee surgery. And I was pretty much okay. You know, I was precautioned that I actually may feel a lot better than I was at the time. And it was due to the back itself and how it can operate occasionally. So I was actually precautioned to slow down and not just trust that I was feeling the way I was feeling, because in all honesty, I was feeling pretty good. I was actually able 3 days, I want to say no, 4 days after my back surgery, I was actually able to get on a plane and go to NFL boot camp and have that boot camp for broadcasting and do everything with a back brace and a knee brace on. So it was an experience that I had to get taken care of, but it wasn't nothing that, especially, you know, I didn't even go through rehab or proper training facility. Like, I'm pretty sure Caleb will have the amenities to do so. So I'm pretty sure they'll monitor his situation, but it's definitely something that can be optimistic and he can pull through on the brighter side of.
Okay, so when you talk about this and when you look at this, you're not necessarily taking a cancel Christmas type of perspective. Like, you feel like that's it is something that they you know, that he could recover from?
Well, definitely. This is the thing also that I mentioned, you know what I'm saying? And when you look at it as a player, as a fan, as a outside entity as has any type of investment in it, emotionally or physically into the Titans right now, you're concerned because you really don't know. But here's the thing. The NFL is a multi-billion dollar business. You know, these organizations and owners are businessmen first. With that being said, they are not going to do or make a move without doing their due diligence. You know, you know what I mean? Like, they're going to go out and make sure that they understand the medical requirements, how he's going to move forward, what's the possibilities of even a setback. You know, they understand not only are they optimistic about his progression, but they also understand how deep the setback can be right now. Trust me, they know these type of things, not necessarily, and I hate to put it this way, it's not always about the concern for the player, but the concern for their business.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they don't want to race that first round money, and now here it is, that is gone. I mean, you look at it in a totally different circumstance, but look at what happened last year with Isaiah. You know, if they would have did a little bit more homework and get to know that guy, I'm pretty sure that they would have probably made a different decision. But at the end of the day, you look at it, and that's a multi-million dollar man lost, that they definitely lost money to. So they're going to make business decisions first. I think they've done their medical homework to understand how he's going to move forward. So definitely, I agree with you that that's definitely me saying that I'm very optimistic on a positive end that this is going to work out for all parties involved.
When you were experiencing those back spasms, I mean, you were a guy that was known for your speed, known for your ability to attack the football. When you experienced those, like, how did it impact your ability to play?
Well, shoot, man, to be honest with you, when you out there on that field, it can be all type of things wrong with you, but just the competitive side, the adrenaline running through your body, you really don't have time to be out there thinking about, you know, oh, my back might hurt right now. Now, there has been times that I've been out there not thinking about those things, and all of a sudden I get a back spasm, and I'm like, hold on now, wait a second. Like, let's take a quick time out, everybody. But, you know, those type of things happen. Playing through injury is a part of the job. It's a part of the professional sports world. And, you know, it'll be remorse to say that you're going to go out there and feel 100% healthy your whole entire career. Shoot. Even the comment that LeBron made, you know, recently about him feeling like he may not never get back to him old self, just because, you know, Father Time is undefeated with the physical body, and your body is going to change. You're going to endure injuries and those type of things. So going out and competing shouldn't be a hindrance or a distraction to you completing your job. You know, you go out there, you do your job, and you deal with the injuries as you should, you know. But in all honesty, looking back at my career, shoot, my only year over 1,000 yards, 9 of them games I dealt with a high ankle sprain. So you deal with those type of things. You go out and you perform the best way you can, and you leave it on the field. You don't go out and you don't pay attention to those injuries unless they just restrict you completely from performing altogether.
Yeah, and that's what I was wondering, because, you know, like, I remember when I played, and again, I ain't playing the league, so, you know, it's all relative. But I remember I always had groin issues, right? And
right.
I would plant with my right foot, and if I went to break, you know, out towards the sideline or a comeback or anything like that, it would grab me and be like, hey, not today. You know what I mean? And that's what I was curious about. How, because a groin compared to a back is totally different. So I wasn't sure if there were times where that back was like, yeah, not right now.
Hey, man, don't get me wrong now, TD. Like, I'm just talking about state of mind and what you got to focus on, but you definitely going to feel those injuries, man, especially when you're dealing with your back. I mean, I haven't played ball since I've had my surgery, but there has been movements and occasions in certain situations that I do, you know, getting out the car, my back may grab every now and again or something like that. But it's maintainable pain that was killing me prior to the surgery, you know what I'm saying? So even in that notion, it was still a positive, optimistic outlook on it, and it's been for the best, you know. But I don't think, you know, once you start going through surgeries and dealing with injuries of that sort and playing professional sports, as you stated, man, you're going to make movements there. You're going to feel it. But I think, like I said, all in all, doing your job and understanding what you have to do in order to go perform, sometimes you just gonna have to play through that pain. And it's all about how much pain you can take.
And we're talking to Nate Washington, former Titans receiver. Nate, one of the other things that kind of intrigued me about Caleb Farley, I don't know if you saw his comments, but he was talking about playing Tyreek Hill. And he was like, man, you know, some guys, they're afraid of that speed. And, you know, as soon as the ball snapped, they're nervous and they're retreating. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to play him honest. when you hear a rookie that hasn't taken a snap yet say these type of things, what do you think? I mean, I love the brashness, right? I love the big wavels part of it. But, I mean, what do you think when you hear that?
And I have to agree with you. You know what I'm saying? I understand and I get the notion of, you know, having confidence and playing within yourself and making sure that you go out and not only give your team but your fan base something to look forward to. But in the great words of Mike Tyson, they say everybody got a plan until they get punched in the mouth. It's a totally different, you know what I'm saying, experience when you out there. You go out there with the notion to say, oh, well, I've been watching this guy on TV. I know how to play him. And then you get out there and face him. I mean, until it's done, you're going to have to prove it. You know what I mean? So I'm happy about, you know, the confidence that this young guy has coming in. I've been seeing some interviews from him and hearing him talk big on himself, and especially at that position.
Right,
you almost
right.
You have to have a guy with that type of confidence coming in. So I get it. You know, I'm happy that they have a confident dog in this guy. Let's just keep it in layman's terms, but they got a confident dog in this guy that's going to come out and maybe get beat once or twice, but I'm pretty sure he'll be confident enough to bounce back and try to make some plays those next time around. But in the words of him dealing with Tyreek Hill, let's take one day at a time, young fella, one day at a time.
That's funny, man. That's funny. So one of the other things, you know, for me, Tylan Wallace, receiver out of Oklahoma State, I really liked him. He's a guy that, you know, for the past 2 years, I've been really high on. I love the way he attacks the ball. I love what he does. And I wanted to see what NFL Network said, or NFL.com. I wanted to see what they said about him. And lo and behold, I go to his profile, and I'm reading about him. And the NFL comp that they give is none other than Nate Washington. I had to text you the screenshot, man. What do you think when you see that?
Well, I think it's pretty dope, man. You know, I mean, getting away from football, you know, I wasn't the guy that was the kid that grew up and dreamed of football and had even in being in college, having the aspirations of taking it to the next level. So to now be retired years after the game and still have people discuss or debate my name is pretty dope, you know what I mean, and be all honest. But, you know, watching the kid, you know, even to be compared to him, it's pretty awesome, man. The dude is nice. He's quick. He makes plays. He's a big playmaker. Even the things that you sent me that I seen that they said, you know, being a smaller guy on the out and being able to play on the outside is not an easy task. You know what I mean? So to be complimented for accomplishing that throughout my career, but not really be the well-known guy or the guy on ESPN all the time, you know, having that respect amongst my peers was the most important thing to me. So it's pretty dope to see a up-and-coming prospect be compared to some of the work that I left on the field.
Absolutely. And then in closing, another thing I sent you was Devontae Adams, right? Dez Fitzpatrick said that, you know, his game kind of resembles him. I thought that was interesting. What's your take on that? And what do you think is really necessary to be successful as a young receiver in this league?
Well, I think both questions kind of tie into each other. I just hear confidence. You know, young guys, they come into this league, and a lot of times they may have all the talent in the world, but lack the most important ingredient it is to succeed, and that's the confidence, the experience. You know, so to hear a young guy like that compare himself to Devontae, once again, even back to stating about the young man talking about Tyreek Hill, Caleb, you know, I understand the confidence that these young guys have to come in and perform at the highest rate that they think that they can perform, to believe in themselves and compare themselves to some of the greats. But with all due respect to the young man, he got to give a little more respect to Tay. You know, Devontae Adams is arguably top two, top three receiver in his league, and it didn't come overnight. You know, it came in from putting in the work, showing up on film, year in, year out, you know, putting in some of the most iconic plays that we have of this last 5 to 6 years right now, him and Aaron, you know, so that connection in itself, it's got to be respected, you know, but I'm pretty sure that he didn't mean any harm by it. He's just, you know, being confident in himself and telling everybody, like, listen, if you love Devontae Adams' playmaking ability, that's what I'm here to do, make plays, and I'm all for it, man.
Exactly. I think that's where he's coming from, just as far as styles, not greatness. And that's right. Something that it still was funny to see. You know what I mean?
It's
so
very
I get
funny
it.
Now. It's, you know, you got to give him that hold on player moment. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Hold on player.
Oh, man. Yo, this was just like good times, man. It's bittersweet doing this, right? Because it reminds me of how much fun we had, but it makes me miss how much fun we had at the same time, man. So we got to keep this thing going, and that's what we'll do, man. I appreciate you, brother.
Hey, TD, you know what they say again. As long as you stay the same, it'll come back around, man. We ain't too far away now, man. We're going to be right back on deck, man. It's all good. I appreciate you having me on.
I like it. Let's go.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Byard, and I'm talking with TD.
On the count of three, everybody run back to your fantasy. Now,
all right, back from the break. Yeah, you hear that comment. Appreciate you for playing that, David. So before we get into the draft, the Titans draft, we will address the whole Aaron Rodgers thing and whether or not the Titans should trade for him. Obviously, if they could make that move, it would be an awesome move for them. But, you know, if I could get a Maserati, you know, or if I could get an Aston Martin Vanquish, that would be a great move for me.
Oh, so, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so that being said, like, it's not really all the way possible right now. So I think it's good for fun conversation, but let's push that one aside. Ryan Tannehill is the quarterback right now, and I would be shocked if the Titans were to acquire Aaron Rodgers. And that's not to say Tannehill's better than Rodgers. I'm just saying that situation right now, it's not something that's likely going to happen.
Yeah, 100%.
So that being said, let's go ahead and shift it to the draft, because these are all things that are likely going to be happening. These are 8 players that will be in training camp, and I don't know about ready to go, because not all of them are promised to be ready to go, although I love what Caleb Farley said when I asked him about the possibility and not being ready to go. He said, I rebuke that in the name of Jesus.
And Jesus.
Yes, sir. So I respect that. But so we'll start with Caleb Farley. And I know, David, that was a pick that you really liked, and you felt that he could actually be what they need. Now, here's the deal for me. As you heard Nate Washington say, he was more on the positive side of things as far as this back injury being something that Farley can return from. Mm-hmm. I will say this. If he could get back to form to what he was, this team hit a Daryl Strawberry type home run.
For sure.
Because that guy could play ball. And the thing that I like about Farley is the speed and how he never panics. This is a guy that, you know, they'll try to go deep on, and you'll see him, and it's almost like he wants to turn and run with you. He wants to show you that he could go step for step with you. Now, that could run into some problems as far as like some of the advanced receivers chopping it down and breaking the route back. But another thing that impresses me along with that vertical speed is the makeup speed. Like, this guy has a lot of suddenness. Like, I've seen him in watching some of these games. He's covering 7-8 yards with 2 steps. And and it's almost like a glitch at times when I watch it because how quickly he's able to close. I watched the UNC game, and it was Deami Brown, you know, opened him up. He opened his hips up, and he went vertical. But then when Brown chopped it down and towards on the comeback, towards the sideline, Farley was able to throttle down also. He got into his pedal. He accelerated out of the pedal. And before you know it, he was there to force him out of bounds. On another one, he was there to break the pass off, you know, to knock it down. So these are the type of things that you want from a corner. We talked earlier about his confidence, you know, going against Tyreek Hill. And, you know, as Nate said, these are the traits that, like, you want that from a corner. That's what makes a number one corner, the guy who welcomes a challenge that other people won't. And I think that really stands out. If this guy gets his hands on the football, too, chances are he's going to score.
Chances are, what he did at Virginia Tech was just phenomenal. And I like having that type of swagger with a corner because that's what most corners are. They have that type of swagger. They're like, I can beat anyone in this field.
Yeah, and that's really the feel that he gives. So I think we need to see what the plan is for him, how they figure they're going to bring him along. I think this is a good pick now and in the future. I just I still have my questions.
Of course. It, you that know, back is just, yeah, it's a lot.
I still have my questions. The L5, L4, which came out because he told me L4 also, and S1. He says he's going to be ready to go. Mm-hmm. His agent says he's going to be ready to go. The Titans, they didn't say he's going to be ready to go, but they're confident in the plan that they have for him. So this is one of those ones where it gets a TBD or TBC, to be continued. And we'll continue that on to the second pick, and that was Dylan Raiders. And I think that's a solid pick. I like what guys are asked to do at North Dakota State. And I actually asked him about this, and he said that, you know, they threw every blocking scheme at him, and they asked him to execute all blocks, gap, power, zone, outside, inside zone. So these are all things that will make him ready to go. You know, when he's finally able to become a starter. I just don't know that he's a starter right now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. I don't know that he's a starter right. I think Kendall Lamb and Tyson Brelo are the guys that will be at the top of the depth chart.
Mm-hmm.
But the good thing is that will allow him to continue to develop and make that transition from an FCS school to the NFL. And I saw firsthand, it's not impossible to happen. I saw Carson Wentz, you know, when he was a rookie.
Yeah.
And he came in and he made that transition. So it's not impossible, you know, as an offensive lineman, especially when you have a quarterback that could do it. He seems like he's a pretty intelligent guy. The thing that I like is the self-actualization.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that getting stronger was something that he had to do.
Yes,
so
sure.
When he got that one, he only played one game, right?
It was incredible. It was one game.
But getting all that extra time from only playing one game, he said, you know what? This is my weakness. This is my area for improvement. I'm going to attack it. So what does he do? He goes out and gets Joe Staley, former 49ers lineman, left tackle, a guy who was always known for his strength, agility, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he trains with him. And lo and behold, he becomes a stronger player.
Yep.
So I like that. That shows me that this guy is willing to recognize what has to be done and find ways to do it. So that's a good sign for Titans fan. That's a good sign for the Titans as well. I think he will eventually be the right tackle, but also he is able to play guard. So if they do need – the more you could do, you know.
The more of the offensive lineman to do, it's the best.
Exactly. You want guys who are versatile. So that's my thing with him. Now – Monty Rice.
Woo!
All right. So I think he's a good player.
Yeah, yeah.
I just don't know if 92 was the right spot to take him. And for me, I think it really comes down to how do you feel this guy is going to fill your roster in the future? Mm-hmm. If you're looking at him as a Rashawn Evans replacement, in my opinion, you could have waited and gotten Derek Barnes out of Purdue.
Yes.
And Barnes is a guy that's very similar to Rashawn Evans in that he got to Purdue, was used as a pass rusher, then converted to inside linebacker and went bonkers and became, you know, a legitimate prospect.
Yeah.
And I think, not to say either one of them were not legitimate prospects as outside guys, but inside seems to be a better suited area for them to play. So that being said, you got Monty Rice here. Monty Rice obviously is going to be a core special teamer. He's a leader, team captain. These are all things that, you know, personnel people like, especially in this situation coming off the Isaiah Wilson deal.
Yeah.
But, you know, the other thing, like, he's a thumper. He does a really good job at diagnosing things, sorting his way to the football, and making the tackle. So that's a good thing. I think those are good. I just don't know that that's a pick that I agree with at 92. Especially when you have some of the players that were available at that time. But if he could get in here and they could get him, you know, into a spot where he could be one of their future. And typically when you draft a guy in the third round, typically that's, you know, a guy who you intend to be an eventual starter.
Yeah.
So he could give them an option if they have to move on. Because I don't think Rashawn Evans and Jayon Brown are going to be back next year. I think it's going to be one or the other.
For sure.
They've already declined Evans' fifth-year option. Jayon Brown, essentially what he signed is a one-year deal.
Yeah.
I think if Jayon Brown is able to be healthy and show what he could do on a full season basis, I think he's going to get paid.
For sure, for sure.
So it may end up being a Jayon Brown, Monty Rice, and David Long situation. So we'll see what happens there. But pick number 100 is my absolute favorite.
100%. It's a good one.
Elijah Molden is a player. We had him on here along with some of his teammates from Washington. Mm-hmm. And he's a player that I said it before. I don't know if there's a better match of player and team. And it's just funny to me because, you know, Mike Vrabel said he was actually impressed mm-hmm. by how much Molden knew about him. Molden said that this is the team that he wanted to go to. He knew their defense. He knew their personality. I think that's really outstanding. And then for a team that needs help as far as improving the communication,
mm-hmm.
I talked to Elijah about that, you know, when we had Keith Taylor on too, one of his fellow cornerbacks, and we talked about the importance of communicating and especially having that being relayed from the nickel. Mm-hmm. And he said that's a role that he embraced.
Yeah.
Coach Lake, Jimmy Lake, the defensive coordinator prior to that was the DB coach, mm-hmm. and they gave him a lot of responsibilities and he handled that well, was able to process it and still play fast.
Mm-hmm.
That's obviously a plus, especially, again, for a team that is looking for improvement on the communication side of things.
Yeah.
But then when you look at just on the field, what he does as a nickel, I think he is able to do everything that you ask of him. The one thing that I would be concerned about is getting him to carry a speedy receiver on a vertical threat down the field. I don't know if he's a guy that you could trust to run with T.Y. Hilton.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he's a guy that you could trust to run with Tyreek Hill. I mean, there aren't many, but judging from what Caleb Farley says, he's that guy. So maybe they can switch it up. But
maybe
no,
boys can do something.
In all seriousness, that's the one thing. But when it comes to blitzing off of the edge, when it comes to selling out against the run,
mm-hmm.
when it comes to being a single post safety, when it comes to matching up against quicker receivers, I think, and even bigger receivers,
mm-hmm.
I think he does all of that. Quicker and fast, two different things.
Yes.
When I say quicker, I'm talking about the guys running, the underneath routes and those type of things, the third and seven routes, those types. So that's what I'm talking about there. Let's not get it confused. I think he is a really good fit. 5'10", 190 pounds. He is, like I said, more than willing to mm-hmm. do whatever it takes to defend the run. That is a guy that's going to bring a lot of energy, a lot of polish. His father was a player in the league, Alex Molden, mm-hmm. for the Saints. And I think, you know, for a team that needs draft picks with maturity, he really brings it.
Yes. I like that they got two good corners. Again, like Elijah and Farley, those guys, I think they're going to do great together. And it helps that Elijah, I think he's been – on social media trying to get the fans, man. I think I like that the most about that. And it just helps out. And Monty Rice, he's a I was going to say this, Titans fan from when he was a little kid.
Yeah.
So I think that helps out. I think that helps out a lot too with him getting to this team is he actually cares about this team and he wants to be a part of the franchise. I think that helps out a lot. And that didn't help out with
There it is. A good way to generalize it. Last year. That is pretty cool. You know, he had the picture of himself at a couple Titans games tailgating. So that was really cool. And we'll see how that works out, man. We'll see how that works out.
Sure.
But moving on to the fourth pick, Des Fitzpatrick. We talked a lot about him with both Nate Washington and Chris Sanders. I like what he brings. He was one of the guys that, you know, I felt would be an option a bit later, you know, on day three.
Yeah.
I was leaning more in the direction of Cornell Powell or Josh Palmer.
Yes.
But this isn't a pick that Titans fans should be mad at. And I know they traded up to get him. I know Tylan Wallace was on the board. I know Kay Johnson was on the board. And these are legitimate players. Mm-hmm. I just think at 109, you're getting a guy who has some polish to his game. You're getting a guy who provides the vertical threat. And, again, he's not a 4-2 guy.
Yeah.
But it's okay. You could be a guy who has decent speed but really good technique and threaten the teams vertically. You could do that, and that's what he does. And you watch some of his routes that he runs. I actually was impressed with some of the double moves that he's able to run. So I think this is a guy that, you know, comes in and does what they need to do. Catches the football, gets open, catches the football, and he blocks. And that's something that John Robinson said They need it. You know, they said they mentioned how he's a big, sturdy receiver that's able to, you know, willing to get involved in the running game. And, you know, frankly, as Mike Vrabel said, you know, these receivers have to block for the running backs just the same as the running backs have to blitz pick up and no pass pro so that their quarterback can throw them the ball. So there it is, that team aspect. And that's something that he did, obviously, you know, blocking on screens for Tutu Atwell, blocking down the field for an explosive player like Javian Hawkins. These are the things that he's going to carry over to the Titans. The work ethic is something else. Yes. So I think right now he's obviously not a guy where you're going to say, oh, pencil him in for 1,000 yards. But I think he's a guy that you could put in there and know that he's going to give you some big plays. Mm-hmm. It's a nice mix now. I still remain questionable about the slot receiver position. We'll see what they have. Yeah. I've had people mention Cam Batson. To me, he's more of an outside guy, but we'll see. I mean, he is a shorter, shifty type of guy, but he doesn't really fit that. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see.
Mike Vrabel seems to feel confident in it. So, Titans fans, your coach feels confident. I guess you should feel confident, too.
Of course.
Rashad Weaver. We opened up with the off-the-field stuff.
Yes.
So I'm not going to rehash that. Uh-huh. But as a player, he's able to do.
Yeah.
You know, he has some versatility also. You see him rushing from both sides of the ball, line of scrimmage, excuse me. Yeah. You see him, I've seen him standing up rushing. You saw him, as John Robinson said, move in and go over top of the guard and you know, be a guy that was asked to do that at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah.
I like the way he defends the run. I like his power. He's a very powerful man. His hands are really good. So that's going to be interesting to watch. If all of this off-the-field stuff could get cleaned up, I think they have a legitimate contributor. I think that's going to add to the rotation. Mike Vrabel said that he's going to go with the outside linebacker group, so they'll let you know where they foresee him. Obviously, they need that, having fielded three outside linebackers for almost every game last year. So that's an area that they're going to have to look to be better with. Mm-hmm. Moving on, Racy McMath. Yeah, I think that's more of a developmental thing.
But exactly.
The tools, oh my goodness, all the tools are there, right? As far as
he's really
size
good.
And speed, right? You like that. Height, weight, speed. Those are the HWS. You like that. But I just want to see if he can incorporate any kind of quickness to his game. I mean, he is somebody you might be able to just put out there and say, hey, listen, man, run a straight line as fast as you can to kind of stretch the field, you know, on those type of things.
It's funny. I love his name, Racy. That's just a great name.
Yeah.
I think this he's kind of like a John Ross a little bit. You know, needs a little work on his route game, and I think that's it's a good pick for the sixth round. But again, you need as long as he can develop into a really good good wide receiver, I think that would the fourth option for wide receiver. I think that would help out the Titans.
I think he's going to end up being, you know, a little bit further in the back end of the rotation. Special teams, they really like that. I posted something on Twitter about him, and Mike Tannenbaum, former GM of the Dolphins and now a teammate at ESPN, he said that he's an instant special teamer. So you got to build the meat and the potatoes of the roster in the back end of the draft, and that's, I think, what they're doing. Me personally, I would have selected Kay Johnson here, who did undrafted and ended up signing an undrafted free agent deal with the Seahawks, and I think they got a really good player there. But we'll see what happens with that one. Then you got Brady Breeze out of Oregon to kind of wrap it up. And for me, this is another pick that's questionable to me. Mm-hmm. Just you're getting a special teams guy, right? And I think that's the extent that he'll bring. At the same time, I mean, I saw firsthand a guy like Chris Maragos, right, just stick around the NFL. And he won a Super Bowl, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, and I see the same type of situation where he'll come in and be a core special teams guy. You're not going to really ask him to play defense.
Yeah.
If you do have to ask him to play defense, it might be a little bit troubling.
Yeah.
But he, I think, is one of those guys that will contribute as far as the locker room is concerned. Always, you know, bringing that upbeat, bringing that effort, because that's what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And, hey, man, you look at Oregon, The guy has a nose for the football. You know, he'll find the loose balls and stuff like he has a way of finding. We said it about Farley earlier.
He did,
right?
Yeah.
This guy, too, if Breeze gets his hands on the football, he very likely is going to score.
Yep.
There's nothing wrong with getting some special teams touchdowns, right?
Nothing at all.
You know?
I think that's what's good about Racy and Breeze is they're those guys are going to be good on the special team. They're going to be on that special team, and they're going to contribute at least, hopefully, from that perspective. That point of perspective. And that's what happens with the sixth and seventh round anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, you get those core guys. So that's pretty much my rundown of the draft. I don't do letter grades or anything like that. I ran a bit over, but I wanted to kind of dig into this a little bit more. And there you have it. So that's the show for this week. Shout out Nate Washington. It was good getting the Nate and TD going again. My guy Chris Sanders all the time. Shout out Elijah Campbell. And shout out you, David.
Free shot, man.
Giving your takes, man.
Yes, yes.
It definitely worked out, and we'll have to do this again. And ultimately, the biggest shout-out goes to each of you who are listening. I appreciate that. We appreciate that.
Yes,
the support means a lot. And we want to keep this thing rolling. We'll be back next week. Thanks for tuning in. Good night, and God bless.